Petersfield's Shine Radio.
Hello, I'm Claire Venice.
And I'm Geoff Lacey.
Roses are red, violets are blue.
The stars are sparkling, and we are too.
In this week's
Peapod.
Welcome to this week's Valentine's Peapod. We thought we'd bring a little love and sparkle your way with Valentine-themed features, as well as an illuminating talk with astronomer Dr. John Mason from the South Downs Planetarium and Science Centre.
Laura Shepherd talks to wine expert Phil Humphreys about sparkling wine to get you in the mood. For a drink or two, of course, on Valentine's Day.
And Noni Needs has your Valentine's Day preparations covered with an easy hollandaise sauce recipe for a special brunch and some flower ideas from Liss floral designer Sandra Dodds.
I catch up with a Scottish John Walker from the Petersfield Post on a very cold and windy Sunday, and Susie finds Flapjack when she gets lost in Brereton on this week's Wild Walk.
And we'll end this special Valentine's Peapod with music from Portsmouth singer-songwriter Joe Johnson with his new heartwarming love song, Promise.
If you love Petersfield...
I love the square.
It's a lovely, lovely town.
The hangers.
Everyone's welcome.
Then the Peapod loves you.
It's just a nice town.
Everything Petersfield is in the Peapod with Claire Venice and Geoff Lacey.
Hello, Claire. How are you?
Hi, Geoff. I'm okay, thank you. A little bit chilly. Have you warmed up from your chat with John Walker at the weekend?
I tell you what, it was brass monkeys outside the church yesterday.
It's not much better today or the rest of the week, is it really?
It isn't. It isn't. The only good thing about this cold weather is it means it's going to freeze the field, so I'll be able to go for longer walks rather than just sticking to the road, which will be good.
Or squelchy walks, which you've possibly been doing then as well.
Yeah. So, Claire, Valentine's Day is nearly upon us. Do you have any plans?
You know, we don't really celebrate Valentine's Day because usually my husband's away this time of year. He goes away for work. And so, you know, he's not here. He usually does send me a bouquet of flowers, which is always really loved because I do like flowers. And I might pack a few silly chocolates in his suitcase. So this year, and the fact that it falls on a Sunday as well, I think we'll do a family Valentine's and have a nice meal, a Sunday lunch or something. How about you?
I'll have my usual bromance with John.
Of course.
As Valentine's Day is on a Sunday. I might go to one of the supermarkets about 3:30 to see what flowers are yellow stickered. You know?
She's a lucky lady.
Yeah, in more ways than one.
Yes. It's a funny one, isn't it, Valentine's Day? It comes at an odd time of year. I suppose it's middle of February. It gives us something to do, doesn't it, to get through February?
I'm a bit cynical when it comes to things like this. But, yeah, so it's just another day for me.
Maybe what you could do, actually, because the South Downs Dark Skies Festival starts this coming Friday, the 12th of February, maybe you could do something really romantic, Geoff, and stand outside and look up at the stars together.
Now, we do that quite often, actually, especially during the summer, late summer, when you got the shooting stars. And there was one night where Yolanda and Theo were watching the stars. They counted 15 shooting stars, and I counted none. Because I think my brain isn't quick enough, or I was blinking at the wrong time.
You're looking in the wrong direction.
So, yes, we do like to stargaze, but, yeah, I'm not very good at it. What about yourself?
Well, I'm not either. I mean, I love it when it's dark and there's a beautiful, clear sky outside. We're lucky we live out away from a lot of lights, so the sky can be stunning and it does take your breath away. But I don't really know where to start when it comes to, you know, recognising stars and planets and that kind of thing. So I am looking forward to the festival. We're going to, as a family, you know, we're all home, so we might as well, you know, take advantage of it. So we are looking forward to, particularly the Friday evening, where there's going to be a live stream online of the planetarium and the night sky. So really looking forward to that.
Oh, I may have to look out for that then.
Let you know.
How's lockdown in your house? You've got three daughters. How are they finding it?
We said before, haven't we? It's a bit Groundhog Day. So we're in a bit of a routine now. Mm. We know what it's all about and just get on with it, really. It's very matter of just kind of let's just get through it. I don't know, probably the same in yours, I imagine, Geoff.
Yeah, it's when they're either not doing schoolwork or college work, it is just trying to involve them in everything we do, because they're locked away in their bedrooms for so many hours in a day. Then they've got the Xbox, so it's tough But it's really important to ensure that their well-being is as it should be.
Yeah, getting them out of their bedrooms hard, actually. How do you manage to do that? How do you communicate with them?
I have wound up my eldest by a couple of weeks ago. I set up a family WhatsApp group, much to his despair. And so I've taken great delight in sending messages. And he goes...
Is he responding or is he just deleting them?
Well, he is responding. He said, okay. He did say, we're now like every other cringe family that has a family group chat.
Our eldest does something similar. Yes, our eldest does something similar. She sends us messages if she wants something or, you know, needs us quickly for whatever reason.
Yeah. But I don't see anyone in the morning because I'm up and out to go to work. I have a number of nicknames. But one I don't like at all is John.
Right.
And whenever he responds, he goes, all right, John.
Because he does. Gotta love it. We'll look back fondly on these days, I'm sure, Geoff. I'm sure. But one final thing, actually, I was going to ask you, Geoff. There's a fundraiser that's happening in town this week. Started Monday and it's going on until Valentine's Day, actually, until the 14th, to raise funds and support the NHS nurses at the Petersfield Community Hospital. And it's actually not just for runners, but it's for runners and cyclists and people who like to walk or wheel, whatever takes your fancy. And they're trying to encourage people to take part to, as a community, as a running community, to get to 1,000 kilometres by Valentine's Day. I guess by the end of day on Valentine's Day.
Right.
So I did wonder, maybe, Geoff, if you're cycling occasionally, I know you do, would you take part in that, do you think?
Yeah, I could do. I did, because I was meant to go for a walk over the weekend, but the forecast wasn't brilliant. So I did do 16K on the exercise bike while watching the cricket.
Very good.
So perhaps I could get the Lycra on and do an hour or so between now and Sunday.
We have to warn everybody that you're going to be doing this inside, though, right?
Well, no, I might just take the exercise bike out into the middle of Herne Farm in my Lycra, you know.
In this,
I know,
nice,
a bit cold.
Warm weather.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, I had the coldest run ever, I think, I've ever had today. I went out, probably wouldn't have gone out had it not been for the fundraiser starting this week, but I'd said I'd do a bit of running and yeah, it was chilly. Actually, but not as icy as I thought it was going to be, so fingers crossed. We can all manage it, you know, and get to that goal by the end of the week.
But I see joggers out when I'm driving to work. And when it was icy last week, you could see them tiptoeing along. And I'm thinking, why? Why are you doing that? One false move and you're going A over T, as they say. That must be like a drug that you've got to do it.
It's, well, yeah, I guess everyone has their own reasons. It's, for me, it's headspace, definitely. And you know, just a bit of exercise. But just running out. I love running outside. It's great. Maybe not so much today.
But I did. There was a friend of mine on Facebook. She's doing the Couch to 5K. And she asked for some, and she wants to listen to something while out plodding along. And she said she'd prefer podcasts and was looking for some recommendations. So obviously, I did say the Peapod. And I got a laughing emoji, which I thought was a little rude.
Oh, well, if she's listening to this, I hope she's enjoying it.
Claire Venice and Geoff Lacey in Petersfield's Peapod.
Coming up, John Walker from the Petersfield Post brings the latest news, and Susie finds a welcome treat when she gets lost in Burriton. But first, we're inviting you to send a message to that special someone in your life using the power of radio. And Geoff does his best, Barry White.
This Valentine's Day, we're inviting you to send a message to that special someone in your life using the power of radio. And while you're at it, why not dedicate a song to them?
Call Petersfield 555 500 and leave your message. Or email it to team@petersfieldradio.uk for one of our presenters to read.
Spread the love this Valentine's Day with Shine Radio's Love Letters.
Shine Radio.
It's a cold and brisk Sunday lunchtime. John, how are you?
Hi, the new. 'Tis the beast of the east has returned, Jimmy.
And what accent was that?
I'm not going to mention my Scottish descendants just yet, or ancestors even, but no doubt we'll get round to that in a minute, Geoff.
Yes, let's start with our sporting weekend. Now, we both like rugby. John, what did you think of the England-Scotland game yesterday?
Oh, flower of Scotland. Well, I don't know if I've ever told you, but I am of Scottish ancestry.
Now, that is breaking news. I thought you were Petersfield born and bred, but it comes to light, you're Scottish.
Yeah, in the dim and distant past. I think we've all got one somewhere, haven't we? Well, I mean, it probably just sums up the last few years' relationship between England and Scotland, doesn't it, to be fair? They're fighting to stay in the EU. They want independence, and now they're winning at rugby at Twickenham after 33 years, or however long it's been for the first time. So, yeah, it was what can you say? England were poor. Poor choices, poor options. Sometimes a poor execution. And Scotland were right up for it. And I've said for some number of years that England should look at how they're playing. They should be playing more ball in hand, more running, almost freestyle perhaps, instead of this insistence on all their forwards being 18 stone and 6'3". But there we go. We shall see.
Yes, I spent the afternoon watching Portsmouth on iFollow, and then I stopped watching that after we went 2-0 down. I started watching the rugby. I stopped watching that when England started losing. So, it was a difficult Saturday afternoon and evening.
So, in effect then, Geoff, you're a fair-weather friend and the supporting front. The team start losing, you disappear to do something else.
Yes, I hit the kitchen to make tea. So, John, what is going to be in the Peaceful Post this week?
Well, obviously no rugby, because there is no rugby or football in Petersfield or anywhere else for that matter for the moment. Unless, of course, you're a paid professional and you have to earn a living and go to work. Yeah, this week there was quite a nasty accident along the road from Weston to East Meon on last night, Saturday night. Car on its roof by Bo Peep Pond. I couldn't see if anybody had been injured or not, but everybody was there. Unfortunately, the emergency services didn't close the road at the junctions. They just closed the road 10 yards away from the actual accident. So everybody was getting down there. And if you know that road, it's very tight to turn around. It's like something out of a chaos movie. There was cars beeping and bumping and shouting and bawling. But hopefully nobody was hurt. It didn't look to be injured. It just looked as though perhaps a deer ran out in front of it. Something you'd know all about, Geoff. Probably the same one, perhaps. Thought it was you again. I did see one scuttling into the hedge down the road further on, funnily enough. But no, I think it was probably something as simple as like that, and it went up on the bank and just rolled over. It didn't appear to have been going fast. The car looked virtually intact, to be honest, so I don't think there was anybody hurt. I hope there was nobody hurt. Yeah, and we've got, I don't know if I mentioned this last week, but we've got a double-page spread on the Winton players and how all the loveys are collapsing in the lockdown. Geoff has just made a generic Anglo-Saxon gesture at me then, which aren't going to too much detail. And always going to have a flounce, I think, as well. But no, I fully appreciate anybody who does anything that involves public participation, whether it's acting, sport, music, theatre, musicals, whatever, is having a hard time, because what they go to work 5 days a week to earn money to do and enjoy themselves and get pleasure from is not happening. And it's not happening for all the people who go along to watch these live events. And the sad thing is, it's a bit uncertain as to when it's all going to return again. As I mentioned last week, of course, for the local amateur dramatic groups, there's going to be the added bonus of increased charges at the festival hall, which the town council are quite happily saying nothing about at the moment, but it has been noted. And I just feel sorry for them all. Is that better, Geoff? Yeah. You can come back now.
Yeah, you've redeemed yourself there, John.
Oh, I see there. He's going to blow me a kiss now. Don't you just love these thespians? Yeah, there's some interesting letters this week in the Post. There's a bit about PCAN, I believe, the new Petersfield environmental group that is going to save the world. In effect, but they're a good bunch of people who just want us all to live a bit more of a environmentally friendly life. And why not, when we're sitting here and stood here in February and what is effectively a blizzard, which is, it was never like this when I was a lad, Geoff. Winters were proper and summers were sunny.
So, John, it's a farmer's market today, and the town is busy. It's great to see lots of people out, but once again, quite a few people ignoring the no access up the high street.
Yeah, I mean, I feel that we're both getting back on our soapboxes and banging our drums here, but it's unbelievable, it really is. That particular road closure by outside Lloyd Bank, look, between Lloyd's Bank and is it
HSBC?
I mean, it was the Bank of England when I was a kid, but never mind that. Look where they've got us. yeah, it clearly says from the bottom of the High Street that that bit of the road is closed. And still they drive through it. It's incredible, amazing. This is meant to be an affluent, middle-class town where everybody is supposedly intelligent and just ignoring signs.
While I was waiting, I actually saw two come up to outside HSBC and turn left into the wrong way round to go round the square. So it is quite unbelievable. Problem is, though, John, it's a great idea that's not being policed or followed through properly.
Oh, this is true. And these people aren't protesting. And let's be clear about that. They're not protesting about the closure. It's not a valid protest in the terms of they don't think this closure is a good thing. It's not that at all. It's just people being ignorant and choosing to ignore the rules for their own convenience. And it's not hard. You know, you've only got to think when you set out, I can't go up that road, I'll go a different way. And all right, if you've been driving through town for years, your instinct says, you know, you're there before you realise. But you've got plenty of choices to go left around the square and go down Sheep Street or back on yourself down St Peter's Road. Or just read the signs at the bottom of the High Street. It's not hard. It clearly says, road closure ahead.
Now, John, one of my favourite features in the People's Post is when you go for a walk. Have you got any walks lined up?
I have got walks lined up, Geoff. As soon as I can find someone to do them, No, I've got some good walks lined up. We're going to go up around Durford Woods. There's some interesting walks over there. Iping Common, there's a lovely walk over there. There's some good walks about. Some of them you can walk to, which at the moment I suppose is ideal. Others you might have to drive no more than 2 or 3 miles, which again I think is probably permissible. There are some lovely walks, and whatever happens, however we moan about the traffic or the farmers market, are they farmers, Geoff? Are they farmers, any of them? But yeah, we are lucky to live in this beautiful area, and there are some walks, and there's places that you only got to walk a few hundred yards, like the Poet's Stone. You can park there. If you're not the fittest of people, you've only got to walk 40 yards and you get some spectacular views. Although I did bump into an army major the other day when I was last up there with a bloody great pack on his back running up and down Stone Hill from the steep side. And after the fourth time, I said, what are you up to? And he said, just keep him fit, son, just keep him fit. I said, oh, yeah, that's nice. He said, yeah, I work in logistics. He said, I've got to be on top of my game. Pen pusher.
That sounds like an ultimate goal for both of us. John, thank you once again for catching up. Have a great week, mate, and see you soon.
Thank you, Geoff. Oh, flower of Scott.
The Peaceful Post is out every Wednesday and costs 75p, so please get one with your weekly shop or subscribe to the digital version. A bargain!
The South Downs National Park is hosting the Dark Skies Festival starting on Friday the 12th of February.
The festival brings cosmic fun for 2 weeks with an online action-packed lineup of real-time night sky tours, short films on wildlife, live Instagram chats with accomplished authors and stunning footage of space, as well as an astronomical photography competition, to name just a few of the highlights. Claire spoke to acclaimed astronomer Dr. John Mason.
Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me. The Dark Night Skies Festival starts this Friday, the 12th of February. Can you explain how you're involved?
Well, the South Downs Planetarium, of which I'm one of the trustees and the main presenter, we've been involved with the South Downs National Park Authority's initiatives on dark skies since the very first days. And every year when they have these dark skies festivals, myself and other volunteers get involved, but trying to infuse people in the wonders of the night sky and also the importance of keeping dark skies, not just for the fact of a few astronomers, but for everybody who wants to enjoy looking at the sky, for the wildlife that need dark skies, and in fact, for all of our general well-being and mental health. It's nice to be able to go out on a clear, dark night and just lose yourself in the night sky.
When there is a beautiful, clear night and you can see the stars, there's nothing quite like it, is there?
There isn't. And of course, this year is going to be very different. Now, normally, what we'd be doing during the Dark Skies Festival is all of the National Park Rangers and other volunteers, plus the volunteers from the planetarium myself, we'd be going out to various locations in the National Park, taking our telescopes out and showing people the wonders of the night sky and giving them guided tours. Now, we can't do that this year. So this year's festival is entirely online. So it's all about people's personal experience of the night skies where they live. In other words, we're going to bring the night sky into their homes. We're going to bring it to them. And whether they're just looking out of a window at night, remember to turn the lights off in the room first, of course, or whether they're out in their front or back garden, wherever they live, on a clear night, they can get something from the night sky they can see. And we're aiming to try and improve what they can enjoy, what they can understand, and generally get a much better feeling of the night sky from where they are.
Now, the South Downs National Park has an International Dark Sky Reserve status, and this is only one of 18 in the world that's recognised as a dark sky reserve. What exactly is a dark sky? What's the classification for a dark sky?
Dark sky reserves have to be places that can demonstrate not only that they have areas within them where the skies are really dark and where you can get a really good view of the sky, but also that you have all the protocols in place to control lighting at night and development and all the things that might interfere with that pristine dark sky in the future, moving forward. So it's really important, these dark sky reserves. And in addition to those, there are also areas called dark sky discovery sites, which are smaller and are regions where it might be your local village green, for example, or the local cricket field or somewhere, where in the middle of a small town or village, there is an open area which has perhaps the best sky that you'll see from that area. It may not be as good as it could be from somewhere really remote, but it will still be the best in that area. So the idea is to combine a whole range of places, some that are very easy for people to get to, which are right on their own doorstep, so to speak, some that are a little bit more distant. And within the national park, there is a whole range of locations where you can enjoy the night sky. And the only difference this time is that we can't take people to those places. They're going to have to stay at home, as we all have to do. But we're going to try and show them how they can enjoy the sky from where they are.
And you are starting the festival on that Friday evening at 7 p.m. with a real-time tour of the night sky.
This is a very exciting thing that we've been working on for some months. Obviously, normally, people would come to the planetarium. They would sit in this large circular auditorium with a hemispherical roof, and we would project the stars onto that dome and be able to show them a really good night sky. Now, of course, we can also do exactly the same thing by taking them outside on a dark site. But what we're doing in the planetarium this year is something that we've never done before, and I don't think has ever been done quite like this before in this country. We are going to actually bring a dark night sky planetarium show into people's homes. In other words, we're filming a complete planetarium show with me showing people a guided tour of the winter stars, and we're doing it and filming it, and then that film is being sent as it happens out onto Facebook Live. So in other words, the first show, which is 7 o'clock on Friday evening, Friday the 12th of February, which is a tour of the stars, the constellations, and all the things you can see, it will be going out at 7 o'clock on Friday evening, and the sky you'll be seeing will be exactly the sky for 7 o'clock on Friday evening. In other words, it'll be exactly like the sky you can see for yourself at that time. And then we're doing another one on the 17th of February, and of course the sky will be a little bit different. We'll have a crescent moon in the sky, but also The following day, on the 18th of February, we have that very exciting landing on Mars, where the Perseverance rover is hopefully, fingers crossed, going to touch down in a really exciting location on Mars, Jezero Crater. And so we're going to preview that landing in the show on the 17th. And then on the 24th of February, we've got our third and final real-time tour of the sky. So you'll be seeing the sky as it is at 7 p.m. on the 24th of February, when the moon will be our main focus, because the moon will be very bright in the sky that night.
It sounds absolutely fascinating. This is great timing to be able to encourage more people to find out about the dark skies and all that's out there in space. How long have you been an astronomer then, Dr. John?
When I was 7 years old, I saw a very bright shooting star one night and was absolutely fascinated. And my mother got a book out at the local library for me to have a look and see what it was about. And then for my 8th birthday, my sister bought me a little book. It cost half a crown in old money, The Observer's Book of Astronomy by Patrick Moore. And I was very fortunate in that some years later, I met Patrick and I was able to work with him. And he was my mentor for 45 years until he died. And I'm very, very fortunate that I had Patrick's mentoring for all that time. And without him, I wouldn't be talking to you today.
He is the astronomer that, well, I remember from my childhood. He was on the television, and that's fascinating that you were with him.
But of course, a lot of younger people today don't know Patrick. I mean, it's over 8 years since Patrick died now. I'd like to think that his legacy goes on, and I'd like to think that I'm trying to continue his legacy. And I hope that this Dark Skies Festival does have a big influence on people young and old, in the making them appreciate the night sky more. I mean, people have been suffering from a lot of anxiety and stress over the past year or so. And going out into your garden on a clear night and just looking up at the stars, it really has a beneficial factor in helping us to cope with this. And there is no doubt that engaging with the natural world in general is good for mental health. And that is what the national park, of course, is all about. It's about engaging with nature, the natural world, and dark skies is just part of it. The whole of the wildlife, the countryside, and all the other things are part of this natural world. And engaging with that is good for our mental health at this time.
What would you say to people, young or old, who are interested but don't know where to start?
The thing is that you don't need a telescope to get started. I started just with a deck chair and a star map and a red torch. And when I was young, I would go out into the garden on a clear night and I would sit in the deck chair with my star map and I would learn my way round the sky. And learning the constellations, some of the star names, looking at where some of the most interesting objects were. And then I saved up the money from my paper round, and I bought a pair of second-hand binoculars. And with those binoculars, which were rather nice ones, I still have them actually, those binoculars enabled me to get a slightly deeper view of the sky, see fainter stars, see some star clusters and other objects. And then I was very fortunate in that my father helped to make a telescope. He had some contact with some friends of his, and they built a telescope. And I started to use that telescope when I was a teenager. And it was very, very good progressing from the naked eye view through binoculars to a telescope. So you don't need expensive equipment to get started. The key thing is to learn your way round the sky and to start knowing which constellations, which stars are which, where some of the interesting objects are located. And to be honest, the winter night sky that we've got now at the moment is really a great place to start. As I shall show in my night sky tours, you can use one star pattern to find others. You can star hop, as Patrick used to say, go from one pattern of stars to another and work your way around the sky, slowly learning where things are. And when you do that, you'll have a much better appreciation of what there is and how you need to take the next step, whether it be binoculars or a small telescope or a larger telescope.
In your career as an astronomer, what's been the most exciting thing you've seen?
Oh, I have been very fortunate in my life to have seen many amazing things. Total eclipses of the sun. They are absolutely amazing. I've been lucky enough to see two meteor storms, which are showers of shooting stars, where instead of seeing one or two, you see several thousand an hour. My first sighting of Halley's Comet, that was incredibly exciting, being that it only comes round once every 75 or 76 years. So I saw it once and I won't see it again. So there are many, many things, not just things I've seen myself, but experienced. The landings on the moon, the robot landers on Mars, the flyby of Pluto in 2015 by that spacecraft New Horizons. There are just so many things. My first sighting of a really incredible display of northern lights. That still is amazing. I mean, the Northern Lights is something that I go and see quite often. Obviously not in the past year, of course, but I have done previously. And every display of Northern Lights is an absolute thrill because you never know what you're going to get. You don't know if it's going to be an average display or something really incredible. So these are amazing things, and the night sky is full of amazing things.
Dr. John Mason, it's been fascinating talking to you. Thank you so much for telling us about the upcoming Dark Skies Festival. And I wonder if maybe you would be willing to come back after the festival to talk to us in more detail about what you've seen there.
Yes, of course. I'd be only too pleased to.
For more details about the Dark Skies Festival, go to the South Downs website, southdowns.gov.uk.
And if Dr. John Mason has piqued your interest in astronomy, you can find out more about our local Hampshire Astronomical Group from President Graham Bryan when he spoke to Shine Radio's Phil Humphreys. To listen, go to shineradio.uk.
The P stands for Petersfield.
I can't believe that we live in such a idyllic place.
The Peapod.
Susie heads to Burriton for this week's wild walk with Rain and Richard, but she gets lost and finds treasure instead.
No, leave my case. No, leave that, Bubba. Good girl. You haven't heard me say this for a long time, but Rain and I are lost. Now, first of all, I should say that I was going to do this wild walk yesterday, but I was with a friend, and in fact, we hadn't seen each other for so long, it was impossible to get a word in, and it was delightful. So, in fact, I didn't speak to you, I was talking to her. Wild Walk is at Burriton. So it's exactly the same walk as I did yesterday. We came across a table outside a house where there were dog biscuits and flapjack. And obviously somebody inside, I like to think a child, had baked the flapjack and was selling it for a pound. But whereupon my walking companion spotted the dog biscuits and gave one to Rain. And I was saying, I've got no money, I've got no money. But that was all right. She thought that was perfectly fair and they couldn't be meaning a pound for the dog biscuit. That must be for the flapjack. But anyway, I brooded about it. So now you know, this is the sort of person I am. And I couldn't not pay that pound. So in fact, they've made a profit because I came back and left £2 in the tin. So if you're listening and you live in Burriton and you know you bake the flapjack, I want to thank you heartily because I've come today with Richard instead, who had a lovely piece of flapjack and Rain adored her dog biscuit. So thank you very much. So what we did after that was because we'd done a bit of a detour from our usual route through the quarries, which I've talked to you about before, is that Richard spotted there was actually a footpath that goes up past this house that I'd never seen before because normally I'm sort of within the quarries. So we've done that and we've come up and it's wonderful. There are sort of views all the way around. I've taken a photograph, though I must admit probably I'll put the flapjack photograph up because probably more of you are more interested in flapjack. It's great. So I'm going to walk here with Abigail McKern at some point because I bet she knows about this. And we'll start off and see if we can do a long circular walk. But because I've got to get back for yet another Zoom meeting, Richard and I are going to turn round now and just go back the way we've come and then do a bit of a twirl through. I just see his psyching Rain up to extreme badness while I'm speaking to you. I'm trying to keep that Labrador calm. He's laughing. So we'll go back through the quarries. And it's lovely. It's very sunny. But as you will have experienced in the recent weeks, you know, we've had everything. We've had snow, ice, rain, sun, more rain, sun, and I'm told there's more coldness coming, probably by the time you hear this. So who knows? Oh, it's got a stick. What have you got? Good girl. It's the biggest stick, you silly sausage. Good girl.
Flapjacks sound great. I may just have to head to Berriton at the weekend for my Sunday walk.
If you'd like to give some flowers this year for Valentine's but want to steer clear of red roses, Liss-based florist and floral designer Sandra Dodds has some alternative floral options for you. As she tells Noni Needs.
Hello, Sandra.
Hello, Noni. Nice to talk to you.
Valentine's Day is coming up. So, being bunched. Have you ever heard that expression, being bunched? When you're bunched on Valentine's Day, people normally think about red roses, which are rather expensive, and I feel it's rather stressful talking about red roses. So, what, in your experience, what do people like to give on Valentine's Day? It doesn't have to be red roses, does it?
No, I don't get many requests for red roses, actually. Roses, yes, white or pink, because there's so many lovely seasonal flowers around Valentine's week. Ranunculus, narcissi, there's just so many. Astrantia, wax flower. And whenever I say wax flower, people think that I mean artificial flowers. They're the waxen plant and tiny little star-like flowers, and they last for ages. So they're known as wax flowers, and they look beautiful in bouquets. And there's also, this time of the year, anemones, which are beautiful. So I use a lot of nice foliage, but this time of the year, twigs. There's some very pretty catkins and pussy willows, and they look lovely in bouquets. And I sometimes make hearts from them, so a twiggy heart in the bouquet, which goes down very well.
Oh, that's just so creative. What other things can be given on Valentine's? Because I was thinking, oh, a plant.
Yes, you can give a nice plant. And I sometimes do a bowl arrangement with pretty design in there, or even a basket of flowers. People think baskets of flowers sounds so old-fashioned, but they can look very contemporary, or someone might like just a nice traditional arrangement in a basket, and it lasts. And sometimes people get a huge bouquet of flowers and they haven't got a vase to put it in. A vase is quite important to how the arrangement looks. So having something ready prepared in a basket or a bowl. I sometimes get asked for a vase as well. Some people do jam jar arrangements. I have done those, but if you want something bigger, then, you know, a hand-tied bouquet is a choice. But you do need to have the right size vase to put it in.
Yeah. But always lovely to send.
And a single flower wrapped can look very pretty as well. But you can wrap one single rose and it can look very pretty. And tied with raffia, looks very nice, or ribbon.
That's a very good idea, Sandra. How about wreaths?
You could do a heart-shaped arrangement.
That's a great idea.
With twigs or with big flowers or foliage like that. Or you could do a wired one, frame covered with moss or twigs, and hang it on the front door even, or inside the house with pretty flowers. A nice either heart-shaped or round, and that has a lot of impact as well.
But these are all lovely ideas that are nothing to do with red roses, so thank you.
Thanks, Noni. Coming up, Laura Shepherd and Phil Humphreys talk sparkling wine, and Noni is back, this time with a brunch recipe from her neighbour. I'm not sure my neighbours would be so thoughtful. But first, here are a few things going on virtually around the Peatsphere.
The Peapod Events Guide. What's on in the Peatsphere?
This week, from February the 8th to the 14th, sees a community of runners attempt to run, walk and cycle 1,000 kilometres as a fundraiser to recognise the NHS staff at the Petersfield Community Hospital. All running will be done individually and the distance logged on the group's Facebook page. For more information and to sign up, there's still time to add your contribution. Go to the Petersfield Running Group Facebook page. And there's a Just Giving page if you'd rather donate instead.
Homestart Butser and the Half Moon Sheet have joined forces with the Phoenix Arts Club in London's West End to bring a musical theatre home dining experience via Zoom. The event takes place on Sunday 20th of February with live entertainment from the West End and a two-course lunch delivered. Tickets cost £20, £5 of which will go to Homestart Butser. For more details, go to Homestart Butser's website.
And as we mentioned earlier, the South Downs Dark Skies Festival takes place from the 12th to the 28th of February. This year, the festival is all about the personal experience of the night skies where you live, learning about the constellations, the history and folklore that goes with them, and the nocturnal wildlife that depends on them. For more information, go to southdowns.gov.uk.
Should you need it, the Petersfield Town Council are manning the local lockdown helpline on 01730 779 296, and a further lockdown helpline leaflet will be going out to every Petersfield household soon.
And of course, there's always your local radio station, Shine Radio, to listen to. You can choose from a wide variety of audio shows, which are available to listen to on demand, or tune in to the brighter mix of music, local news and weather. That's shineradio.uk, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
If you're running an event, get it in the guide. Just email pod@thepeapod.uk.
If you're considering buying a bottle of Sparkly for Valentine's Day and aren't sure what to choose, look no further. Laura Shepherd talks to wine expert Phil Humphreys about the difference between Prosecco and Champagne.
Phil Humphreys has many strings to his bow, one of which is as a wine expert. Phil, can you tell me how that came about?
Well, who doesn't love wine? I love it so much that I decided to give myself more excuses to drink wine. So some years ago, I actually went through my professional qualifications with the Wine and Spirit Education Trust, and I now run wine tastings both on my own account and also for other wine importers.
Well, today I would like to talk to you about sparkles, because we all need a bit of sparkle in our life at the moment. And Valentine's Day is coming up. So, first of all, what is the difference between sparkling wine, champagne, Prosecco, all those kind of sparkly, yummy things?
Well, sparkling wine is a category of wine, but not all wines are created equal. So if you take champagne and Prosecco, for example, which are the two big names in sparkling wine, they're made in different places. They're both specifically regional wines. So champagne only comes from Champagne, and Prosecco only comes from a region in northeast Italy, just above Venice. They're made by completely different methods and using completely different grapes. And of course, champagne generally costs quite a lot more.
Okay, so before I ask you why it costs more, this may be included in the answer that you give. So we have different grapes that make Prosecco and champagne. What is the different method?
Okay, so the champagne method, this is what's often referred to as the traditional method, and indeed outside of champagne has to be referred to as the traditional method, because in champagne it is the only place where champagne can be called champagne. So the distinctive thing about that is that you make a still wine and you bottle it. You then add some more yeast and some more sugar to that bottle. That's the same bottle that you're going to buy off the shelf. And that has then a second fermentation. And because you've got an intimate mix of wine and yeast, you get those lovely toasty brioche notes out of champagne. And then there's a whole process for how you get all that gunk out of there and put the cork in and all of that. But that's the distinctive thing about champagne.
And Prosecco?
Prosecco, on the other hand, is made by something called the Sharma process, which is slightly less romantically also called the tank process. So here you make wine in a big tank, and then for that second fermentation, you just dose a bit of yeast and sugar into the tank and shut the lid. So there's a much less intimate contact between wine and yeast. So things like Prosecco, and this is a process which is used for a lot of sparkling wines, those wines tend to be a bit more fruit-led rather than champagne, which is all about the yeasty notes and, you know, a sharpness, a brightness to it. I mean, I've done some blind tastings with people saying, okay, here are a couple of fizzy wines, which one do you like? And it's about 2/3 to 1/3 prefer Prosecco, because it's a softer, kind of more approachable sort of wine.
So why is champagne more expensive?
As a regional wine in France, there's lots of rules that define how champagne must be made. And one of those rules governs how long it's got to sit in cellars before it hits the streets. Now, that doesn't apply to Prosecco. And of course, if you're sticking something in a warehouse for a couple of years, now that's money tied up in the warehouse. So it is naturally going to be dearer. Also, of course, with the very discreet area of Champagne, that land is very valuable and they put a lot of investment into that land. Whereas in Prosecco, they actually expanded the Prosecco area about a year and a half ago because there was such demand. They just said, well, hey, let's just redefine the boundary so we can make more of it.
How very Italian. Excellent. So I absolutely hate opening champagne, taking the cork off. I always let somebody else do that for me. There must be a technique. Tell me what it is.
The key thing is keep hold of the cork. This idea of shooting it out and banging it off the ceiling. Yeah, this is nuts. Because the pressure in the bottle of champagne is the equivalent to two London bus tyres. It can make quite a bang. And for many years, you know, those bottles used to explode until an English guy called Christopher Merritt came up with a process for making glass strong enough to hold champagne. And, you know, arguably, don't say this to a Frenchman, arguably, he is the father of champagne, not Dom Perignon. But anyway.
Controversial.
Controversial. But to how to open it, the key is keep hold of the cork and twist the bottle, not the cork. That's the key thing.
Nice tip. If you have champagne tastes but a Prosecco budget, what do you recommend for Valentine's Day?
Ah, well, yeah. I mean, Valentine's Day, it does conjure up the idea of a nice glass of fizz, doesn't it?
Oh, yes.
I would say go for one of the countries that make their wine in a champagne style, so traditional method, but you will find they're quite a bit more wallet friendly. So Cava, that is made by that method. And a couple of years ago, they allowed the use of some champagne grapes. So you can actually get a Blanc de Blanc Cava, which is made with Chardonnay, as a Blanc de Blanc champagne would be. So that's a good way to go. Normally, Cava is made from native Spanish grapes. And my other favourite recommendation is actually wine from South Africa, Graham Beck Brut, which was the wine served at Nelson Mandela's inauguration. Again, same grapes as champagne, same method as champagne, made in South Africa. So it's a little fruitier. It's a little bit more approachable and comes in around 12 quid a bottle. You know, absolute steal.
Very reasonable. Couldn't be better. Thank you very much, Phil.
Thank you, Laura.
Thanks, Laura and Phil. Both volunteers at Shine Radio. So don't forget, if you'd like to join our volunteer team, we'd love to hear from you. You can call us on 01730 555 500 or send an email to pod@thepeapod.uk. Now, Valentine's Day just isn't complete without some delicious treats. For me, it's chocolate. What's it for you, Geoff?
Crisps and nuts. I like my snacks.
Excellent. Wasn't really expecting that, but there we go. Wonderful.
Noni Knees asks her chef neighbour, Peter, for a simple, sumptuous Valentine's Day brunch recipe.
What can we do that is easy and not too expensive and romantic to make our romantic plans great?
Right, OK.
How do we start our day?
OK, the most important thing, I think, you want to start off your day nice and calmly. Start the day well.
Yes.
So the first thing you've got to do the night before, this is your preparation, put that bottle of champagne in the fridge.
I like the thinking ahead. It shows
you've got
intent.
Got to think ahead. Okay, so guys, put that bottle of champagne in the fridge. Now, whether, you know, the next thing I think is start of the day off with a brunch, because I think, isn't Valentine's Day on
Sunday.
The weekend?
Sunday. Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so one of my favourites, and I know it's one of Bernadette's favourites, is Eggs Benedict. You love that?
I love Eggs Benedicts, Peter, but you know what? I'm always put off by the hollandaise sauce.
That is the big thing, and it is so simple. It's made simpler by my modern kitchen gadget.
Okay.
You'd have to stand over a boiling pot of water with a glass bowl, whisking for the days, and then sort of sticking your melted butter in and then it curdling. This takes all that anxiety away from it. It really is so simple, I can't tell you.
Okay.
There's certain equipment you're going to need to get ready. And I think with Eggs Benedicting, it is the preparation to make sure you've got everything all out, all ready for you before you even start cooking.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you a list now.
Go ahead with your list.
One of the most important things is a stick blender. If you haven't got, you know the stick blender that you blend your soup with?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
one of those.
Or if you haven't got that, a conventional blender, as long as it's got the top on the top, which has got a small insert that you can actually pour stuff in through the top.
Okay.
Okay, so those are the two things that are going to really help you out here. You're going to need a slotted spoon,
yep.
4 cups, obviously a saucepan, and 2 sheets of kitchen paper folded in half. So you're not going to separate the kitchen paper. You're going to take the 2 sheets and you're going to fold them in half so you've got a thickness of 4 kitchen paper.
Okay, fantastic.
Right? Mm-hmm. Then what are you going to need in addition to that? You're going to need 2 slices of bread, either sourdough, brown bread, or cheap old white bread, whatever you prefer. Whatever.
Muffins,
your, you know,
bagels.
Muffin, oh, yeah, anything that floats your boat. Yeah, absolutely right. If you're going to go down the fish line, then 2 slices of smoked salmon, 4 large free-range eggs. Now, these must be at room temperature, so they need to be put out again the night before. A dessert spoonful of vinegar, preferably cider vinegar. If you haven't got cider vinegar, it really doesn't matter. 1/2 avocado, okay, scooped out.
I'm loving my breakfast already.
For those that like it a little bit spicy, maybe some harissa. Yeah, nice smoked paprika, chili, and lovely. All right.
Yeah,
so
lovely.
Now, the first thing we're going to do, we're going to make the sauce.
I'm salivating.
Now, the reason we're going to make the sauce first is because that can stand there and it won't spoil.
Okay.
So we're into a bowl or into our blender, we're going to put a whole egg, a juice of 1/2 lemon, a couple of grinds of pepper,
uh-huh.
and that's it.
Oh, okay.
That's all we're going to put in there for the moment. Now, the next thing we're going to do, we're going to melt the butter. Now, we're going to do this in the microwave favourably because you want to get it really hot. So we've got 250 grams of butter, which we're going to clarify. So that means we're going to take away that milky bit of the bottom, which we call the buttermilk.
Okay.
So we're going to put it in a jug. Ideally jug, because you need to pour it eventually. I'm going to put a cover with cling film, prick the tops, make a few holes in the top. This will stop it splashing all over your microwave. Put it onto a fast setting in your microwave and melt it for, and it usually takes, if you've got about 900 watt microwave, it usually takes about a minute. But keep an eye on it. Don't just leave it, because it could just boil all over the inside of the microwave. Now this, when it comes out, it's going to be very hot, so be careful with it. Take off your cling film, turn on your blender with the egg mixture and the lemon juice and your pepper in it, okay? Have it going full power, or ideally it's going to be in another tall pot. This is like a tall jug you've got in the cupboard or something like that, something in the shape of a blender for the stick blender to go in. And basically what you're going to do, you're going to pour the butter as it's spinning on full power into the egg mixture. Now, you don't have to do it slowly like you do making mayonnaise or anything like that. You can do it quite rapidly. I usually count to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. By that time, it should be all in there. But you leave that little piece of buttermilk left. Now, what I want you to do now is taste it, because we haven't had any salt yet. So it could be a little bit, although it's going to have lemons, could be a little bit bland. You can add a little bit of that whey, and I mean 1/2 teaspoon at a time, to get to the seasoning that you want.
Okay.
Rather than just using salt, because you've got there.
Okay.
Okay. Now, in addition to that, what we also like doing, do you know pink peppercorns?
Oh, yes.
Right, okay. Pink peppercorns are called pink peppercorns. They're not actually pink peppercorns at all. They're berries. They're Rose de Bois de Bourbon, otherwise known as Californian holly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're not from the pepper family at all. They're from the cashew family. So anybody with nut allergy,
Be careful. That's such a good tip.
But they do, if you then blend those into the hollandaise as well, they give that lovely little pink flakes all the way through it. Very, very, very pretty. And give it just a nice little taste to it. Now, you've got your hollandaise. You put that onto one side. You know,
is it that easy? That's amazing.
It's that easy. You've done it. You've got your hollandaise done. Finished.
Oh,
and no whisking. It's taken a minute.
Fantastic. Okay.
And you're not mopping your brow with perspiration or anything like that. It's so, so easy.
Okay,
the next thing we're going to do. Please do. The next thing we're going to get the pan of water on, because we're going to poach those eggs. Oh. Now, you want to put, in Old English, 2 inches of water in that pan.
Okay.
And a dessert spoonful of your vinegar. Now, whether it's cider vinegar, wine vinegar, or the old malt vinegar, it doesn't really matter. Just get that in there. Don't put any salt in that water, because that's what destroys the poached egg. It's keeping them all together. You're now going to break your eggs into those cups. Now, the reason you've got a cup is so you can lower them gently into the simmering water without burning yourself. No splash.
This is a health and safety recipe.
This is a health and safety. Now, the thing is with this is, one thing again, like all things with cooking, don't rush it. Take it nice and easy, okay? So we're going to bring the water up to the boil. Now, we're going to just take it slightly off the boil and put those, spin the water with a spoon, a whisk, or anything like that. Just going to start getting it so it's a circular motion. This will help the albumen around the egg fold into a nice, that nice little sort of roundness rather than spreading all over the pan. Pop those eggs in and then give them 3 minutes. Large eggs, to me, 3 minutes. You've got a beautiful cooked white and a lovely, really, really runny yolk. But then as it comes up the boil, turn it down to simmer. You don't want them boiling all the way through that 3 minutes.
Okay.
And the eggs, the water will come off the boil as soon as you put the eggs in, because obviously you're introducing something cold into the water. So just watch that. Pop your toast in, and then, okay, and then when that 3 minutes dingo goes, get your slotted spoon, take them out of the water, and place them onto your kitchen roll. This will drain all that excess water off, because you don't want water all swimming around your flakes, because it's just going to spoil everything.
Yeah.
Now you've got an alternative now. You can either put, if you're vegetarian, you can put your avocado onto your toast, mash it up a little bit, and pop your poached eggs on the top, and then lay your hollandaise over the top. Or, if you're going for the smoked salmon, you can either have it underneath, or I think it looks prettier on the top. So you put your poached eggs onto your toast, hollandaise as much as you like over the top, and then your smoked salmon. And that's as simple as that.
Oh, that looks, that, you know, yeah. Oh, I can picture it, and oh, yeah. I can smell it.
Yeah, nice couple of grounds of black pepper over the top. Perfect. Don't overdo the pepper because you've got it in there, so the salt already, but, you know, it's just so good. And you break through the hollandaise, and the yolk just soaks up into that toast underneath. Oh, one of my favourites.
One of my favourites too.
And it's so simple.
Thank you very much. I love
your
recipes.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Peter Sphere listeners. Give that one a go on Valentine's. Start your romantic plans with a beautiful breakfast or brunch and a very easy hollandaise recipe. So
yes.
Thank you very much, Peter.
You're very welcome. Speak to you soon, Noni.
And you.
Claire Venice and Geoff Lacey in Petersfield's Peapod.
And that's it for this week's Peapod. Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the Valentine vibe.
Thanks to our guests, Dr. John Mason, Laura Shepherd, Phil Humphreys, Noni Needs and her neighbour Peter, Sandra Dodds, Susie Wild and John Walker, and to the gorgeous team of volunteers at Shine Radio who support the show and help to put it together.
We end this week with music from Portsmouth singer-songwriter Joe Johnson and his love song, Promise, released in January this year. You can find out more about Joe Johnson on all the usual social media platforms.
Next week, we'll be getting our fingers dirty and talking to Steve Amos from the Adhurst Estate Allotments.
So from Geoff and I this week,
bye!
So many things I've been meaning to say. My feelings for you are growing every day. I know you're scared of even making a change. I promise you that it will all be okay. I have this feeling every time you are near. So please understand that I do really care. How you really feel when I am near. I know that something is real. I'm worried about what the people may think. The other day, still processing it. So take my hand and don't ever let go. Promise you that you will not be alone. 'Cause I don't know where we're going. keep my mind overflowing. I know there's something within.
To have a plan.
Stay at home and make it shine.
You've got it.
Great lockdown listening from Petersfield's Shine Radio.
It's about staying as local as we can and helping as many people in the community as we can.
Job continues his bromance with John Walker from the Petersfield Post.
You do look lovely. You're the only person I see every week.
Motivation is a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Hello, my name is Matthew. I'm from Class 1G at Church's College, and this is a song I spent hours listening to in lockdown.
I was walking past College Street and saw the phone box. So I had an idea that I'd start a little bookshop. It's really just come in and help yourself.
We've got lovely Lucy with us and Harrison, who's playing with some knobs.
The real pleasure is in the bass.
Bassline!
Stupendously crunchy.
I'm feeling quite patient about the whole thing.
Stay at home and make it shine.
Slightly intimidated by being told so precisely what to do.
Great lockdown listening from Petersfield's Shine Radio.